Good morning. Have a seat. Well, I'm nothing if I'm not about preparation, so let's go ahead and pre-position these. Typically, when you're preparing a sermon, the traditional thing to do is to derive your sermon out of the daily readings, out of the lectionary. The times that you break that is if there is some sort of a special occasion, then you'll probably address that special occasion. Well, this happens to be Goodbye Sunday. Oh, you're not going to find Goodbye Sunday in any lectionary or any liturgical calendar, and there's nothing in the Book of Occasional Services about it. It's just the day that I get to say goodbye. Before another Sunday comes, we're moving. We interrupt this sermon for an important announcement. Next week, Saturday, one day only, Saturday the 27th, out in Briceville, a open house, pack the truck party, and you're invited. It'll be an open house from 9 until the truck is packed. All able-bodied people are more than welcome. You're requested. I can't do this alone. Please help. My beautiful blonde assistant, Jennifer, will have directions to the home available after the church. We now return you to the sermon, already in progress. Let's start with a scripture. Let's start with Romans 8:28. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good for those who love God, those who are called according to his purpose. Now, the world may have never heard of that verse, but they seem to believe in at least the first part of it. We know that God causes all things. Well, that's what they seem to think. When something terrible happens, a bombing in Boston, someone shoots up a schoolhouse, someone shoots up a theater, the world is fast to say, why would God let this happen? Like it was his fault. Like they believe that God causes all things. The atheists will use that as evidence that there is no God. If there was a God, how could he let that happen? The agnostics will use that as a reason for their doubt. Well, I don't know. If there is a God, I don't know how he could let that happen. And even believers will find themselves looking to the heavens and saying, God, where were you when this happened? So it's worthwhile talking a little bit about where was God when this happened. Just a little bit. And I'll use my life as an example. Now, I will tell you ahead of time, this is admittedly stupid adolescence. But back when I was about 12 years old, just going through puberty, I noticed girls were different. I liked the difference. I didn't know what to do about it yet. And I had this adolescent fantasy, you know, that I'd have this mental power, you know, because then I didn't know how to talk to the girls. But I said, if I had this mental power, I could see a pretty girl across the room and I could think real hard at her, come over here and kiss me. And she'd have no way to say no. She'd just come across, yes, master, and she would do that. I told you it was a stupid adolescent fantasy. But let's just stop for a second and think. What if that did exist? What if I did have that power? What if I did look at a pretty girl and think, come over here and kiss me, and she would come and do it? What kind of a kiss would that be? Wouldn't that be like kissing a cold fish? She has no willpower whatsoever, just here it is, I have to do it. Well, now I'm much older and hopefully a little more mature. I have a pretty girl who comes across the room to kiss me. Because she wants to. She gives herself to me. That's exciting. See, that's where the thrill comes from. That giving of herself to me. And that's what God had in mind when he created us. He could have made us have to love him. He could have made us have to obey him. But then that wasn't the relationship he was looking for. He was looking for a different sort of relationship. He was looking for a relationship where we would give ourselves to him, where we would love him just because we love him, where we would obey him because of that love. And in order to do that, he had to give us freedom, free will, knowing all along that when he granted us free will, there would be those who would reject him. There would be those who don't love him. There would be those who do plant bombs and shoot children and things like that. You know, why did God let this happen? Free will. We really don't want to be in a world where God controls everything. We've come to like our freedom, and we've come to like giving it to God. excuse me. But God didn't just abandon us to the bad stuff. God voluntarily limited himself, but he has something that I like to think of as divine or cosmic jujitsu. Now, you know what jujitsu is. I mean, that's the martial art where you don't necessarily try to defeat your enemy. You use your enemy's power, strength, momentum against him. Someone rushes at you who's bigger and stronger than you. You don't try to stop him. You kind of grab him by the collar and encourage him to keep on going where he was. You just direct him. Direct that power. And that's what I think this verse in Romans 8:28 is. God causes all things to work together for good. That's cosmic jujitsu. The bad stuff is going to happen, but God grabs it by the collar and manipulates it to go where he wants it to go anyway. So we still have free will, but he uses it. He uses the bad stuff to turn things to good. We often cannot see how something works to good. But sometimes he gives us the ability to see how things work to good. Trusting in the times that we don't see how it could possibly work out good, that takes faith. When he allows us to see things working out to good that seemed bad at the beginning, that strengthens our faith for the next time when we don't see, if you follow me. Let's consider for a moment Thomas the Apostle, usually referred to as Doubting Thomas. I like to call him Realistic Thomas. And let's face it, he was being realistic. He had a hard time believing that Jesus rose from the dead. If people were playing logic with him, they could have said, well, Thomas, why don't you just go ask Lazarus about this raised from the dead thing? It happens. He said, look, I just can't wrap my head around it. I have to touch him. I have to see him. I have to touch him. I have to know that it happens. When Jesus shows up, notice that Jesus doesn't condemn him. He doesn't criticize him. He just says, okay, Thomas, here I am. Put your hand in my side. Put your finger in the nail hole. That's what you need. And then Jesus says to him, Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believed. I have been blessed in my life to see how God has done cosmic jujitsu in my life. Several big times where something happened that just seemed terrible. I couldn't imagine how it could work out well. And with God's jujitsu, he made it work together for good. And this has strengthened my faith. Maybe I'm realistic Thomas too. Do you think when my parents named me Thomas that there was some influence on my character? I doubt it. <Ba-doom-tsh>. All right. So I'm going to try and relate briefly three big events in my life that started off as something that you can't imagine turning out good and turned out to be some of the best things that ever happened in my life. So let's set the Wayback Machine to about 1970. I'm in college. I'm going out on a date one night. It's an icy night in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And there's about 20 concrete steps at the front of my parents' house. At the top step, my feet went out, and I went down a flight of steps. Broke a bone in my neck, twisted up my mid-back, jammed up my lower back. To this day, I have not had a day without some sort of pain or discomfort since February of 1970. You would think, oh, that's terrible. Oh, it gets worse than that. When I was in college at this time, I was in Army ROTC. I was just short of graduation. I had been selected for a very elite intelligence program that I coveted and wanted to do. And because of the broken neck, twisted back, everything else. I got medically discharged. At a time when everybody else is trying to stay out of the army, I'm trying to get in, and I can't do it. How could this possibly be good? Well, my career path had been shut down, so I went, what any good college student does, I went and got a master's degree while I figured out what was going on. Got my master's degree. I was a bona fide Soviet specialist. I had studied in the Soviet Union, spoke Russian, had 2 degrees now in Soviet studies, and Nixon went to China, and everybody was hiring Chinese specialists, and I couldn't find a job. How could this possibly work out for the good? So had to get some kind of a job while I was trying to figure out what happens next, so I went to the steel mills in Pittsburgh. It is hard to have pride in one's intellectual achievements when one's shoveling stuff in the steel mill and the guy teaching you how to do it has not graduated from the sixth grade. And my intellectual pride is what was keeping me from Christ. This time I thought, you know, Christianity was nice for 13th century peasants, but I was a modern 20th century thinking man. And here I am in the steel mill with this guy, Chuck is his name. He is the without a doubt, the simplest man I've ever met in my life, and he is a witnessing Christian. He is so simple, he doesn't know how stupid he is to witness to this intellectual giant that he's working with. And over the course of several months, I'm in the general labor pool. You show up, they assign you somebody. It's always a two-man team. It's always me and him. The machine always breaks, and we have an hour to sit around and talk. And to make a long story short, I accepted Christ as my Savior. Now, I had been trying to get back into a military intelligence program for now, by this point, 3 years. I accepted Christ as my Savior in October, and in November, the Navy said, we'll let you into our intelligence program. So it was like 3 years of making laps around Sinai. So here's one side of my testimony. Don't be too stiff-necked with God. He will break it if he has to. So, but still, okay, accepted the Lord. That's a good thing. But let's think a little bit deeper. Now, I'm not in the Army. I'm in the Navy. For this intelligence program, I went in the Army. What they wanted you to do is serve a tour in a combat branch. So I was going into the infantry and into Vietnam. I missed the whole Vietnam thing because it was winding up by the time I came into the Navy. I don't know what duty stations I would have had I been in the Army, but in the Navy, they sent me to the Philippines, where I was able to adopt a wonderful little girl who's been the joy of my life. They sent me to... I knew I was going to need these... They sent me to Jacksonville, where I met you. And how am I ever going to replace you? There's a whole life that I would not have had I gone down that other path. God took this terrible accident that involved pain and turned it to good. And I've seen this, and like Thomas the Apostle, I can witness to you about, here's what he has done. You can't argue with my life. It's my life. The second thing I'll share with you, I've already alluded to it. We were in the Philippines, my first duty station. The Lord put it into our hearts to adopt. Why? I don't know. He just did. It was just there. It was just there one day. You know, sometimes I think a thought that's not my thought. I know that's God. So we were all spun up. We decided, all right, we've put in applications. We've started on up. We've asked the folks down at the orphanage that we were dealing with to start looking for an appropriate infant for us to adopt. Because that's what we had in mind, adopt a baby. And Jennifer got pregnant. Now, we had a 2-year-old, and she was pregnant, and we're thinking, adopt an infant probably doesn't sound like a good idea. So maybe we ought to think in terms of an older child. Now, at this point, I'm teaching at Base Chapel, I'm teaching Sunday school for ages 3 to 5. which will show you right away that God has already been working on me. Because that is way out of my comfort zone. And the folks out in the orphanage load a van full of the orphans, the kids from the orphanage, and bring them on base. So half my class were Filipino orphans. And it was kind of, while I was thinking infant, I wasn't seeing a classroom full of kids in front of me. The moment we said, maybe we ought to adopt an older child, suddenly I fell absolutely in love with everybody in that class. I wanted to adopt them all. They'd only allow me to bring one, so I picked the best one. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. 2 days after she came to live with us, my wife had a miscarriage. And the pregnancy that caused us to consider an older child was terminated. Now, getting pregnant and having a miscarriage, that's a terrible thing. How could that ever work out good? I got a daughter who's been the joy of my life. And she's given me 5 terrific grandchildren. And counting. No. So, here's another example of cosmic jujitsu. One last one. 2010, I had a number of different prophecies from a number of different sources that told me that I was entering a period of transformation. God was going to transform everything, my work, my ministry, my health. It was like the 40th anniversary of falling down a flight of steps, and I'm thinking 40 years in the desert, that's enough time, right? We're going to get this fixed up. And I received all that. I received the prophecy that my health was going to be transformed for the good. I was on break, a lunch break at work, and I went down to the convenience store down on the corner to get a soda to go with my sandwich, and I got hit by a Toyota. And I, no kidding, I remember laying on the ground next to the wheel, front wheel of that Toyota, and I looked up at heaven and I said, "Was this what you had in mind?" And apparently it was. How can it get struck as a pedestrian by a car? How can that possibly work out for good? Well, I was injured. I was injured in the same areas that I had been injured 40 years earlier. But now I had an insurance company that was going to walk me through all sorts of physical therapy, chiropractics. They paid for a gym membership. They tweaked up my back better than it has been in some 40 years. Still not perfect. I still have bad days, but far better than it had been for 40 years. And since they paid for a gym membership, and let's face it, my health was in poor, I had gotten fat and lazy, and I had all sorts of other things, sleep apnea and cholesterol and all those terrible things that come with eating too much, which is what I was doing. So I said, all right, we're going to do this. I mean, I've got a free membership with a gym now. By golly, I'm going to use it. And over the course of about 11 months, I lost 50 pounds. I went from sitting on a couch to running half marathons. Not right away. I worked up to it over 11 months. But apparently all those years of overeating and being lazy and all had already done damage that was too late to fix. I wound up getting triple bypass surgery. I mean, I felt something a little bit odd. I had become aware of my body. I knew something was off. I went to see a cardiologist. He did an EKG. He said, there's something wrong here. We want to put you on a stress test. Did a stress test. Failed miserably. So miserably, they said, we're not letting you out of here. We're going to send you across the street to the hospital, and we're going to do a cardiac catheterization tomorrow. The results of the cardiac catheterization led to what I call the quote of the year from the cardiologist, where he said, frankly, I don't understand why you're not already dead. That will get your attention. After they did the surgery, he let me know why I was not already dead. All that exercise I had been doing, my body had responded by building up secondary arteries. So when the primary arteries closed down, the secondary arteries kept me alive. So, no secondary arteries, and I'm dead. No exercise, no secondary arteries, no Toyota, no exercise. God sent a Toyota to save my life. Now, laying on the ground, I could not have imagined in my wildest dreams how that would be good. But there it is. So that brings me around to our upcoming move to Texas. It is not our original plan. Our original plan was to be with you until it was time to get planted. So here it is. We all have the inner conviction that we need to move. And when I say we all, I mean the family. I mean, everything right on down to her granddaughter who's a junior in high school who wants to go and skip her senior year but move with us to Texas. Son, daughter-in-law, the rest of the family depends on what happens with their military careers, but I expect Ethan fairly soon, and we may have to wait 20 years for Jeanette, but I expect that the Lord's just put it on our heart. I mean, we've been a part of this congregation for 29 years. Psalm 37:4 has some insight for me, at least. It says, "Delight yourself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart." Now, most of the time when we read this, we interpret that as, he's going to give me what my heart desires. Now, it doesn't say that. It says, he will give you the desires of your heart. The desire is his gift. At least in this particular case. There was a song in the 70s that one of the lines was, "Your desire is the confirmation that the destination is there." Now, of course, when you have a desire in your heart, you've got to test it. I mean, is it a God-given desire, or is it something like Paul talks about in Romans 7? Is that something that's arising up out of the flesh? I mean, if I have a desire for a Mercedes, is that from God? Or is that just coming out of the flesh? So you start to test it. And I said, we've tested it by looking at it. The whole family has this. Now, you would think that the matriarch of the family would be the one who most wants to stay put. The home is the thing for her. Jennifer can be quoted as saying, "I'm going to Texas. You can come with me." I've learned over a marriage. Jennifer, she's quiet, unassuming. When she speaks for the Lord, I hear the Lord in her voice. And when I hear the Lord in her voice, I am well advised to listen. I don't always listen, which is usually trouble for me, but when I recognize the Lord in her voice, I'd better listen to her. And I said, the whole family, the desire is in all of our hearts, so that's pretty good. To do this, there are a million roadblocks that we had to overcome. Things that cause us to worry all the time. Philippians 4, 6, and 7 says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Notice he says, don't be anxious, let God know, and peace will reign in your heart. Doesn't necessarily say he's going to give you what you ask for, he's going to give you the peace. So the attitude that we've tried to have is, here's all these roadblocks. If this is not your will, Lord, use any one of these to stop us. And any roadblock that comes along that stops us from doing it, we will interpret that as coming straight from the throne room. So whether the answer is yes or no, we have a peace about it. We make an offer on a big piece of property, we understate the offer. Whether it's yes or no, it's from God. The guy answers yes. Not only undercutting his old price, but he's going to throw in the tractor and implements and everything else as well. I mean, just one thing after another. We're buying a large piece of property. Buying a large piece of property is not the same thing as getting a mortgage in a town. Once you get above 15 acres, we're talking about agricultural loans. You have to go to an agricultural land bank. All over the country, we searched all over the place, and every agricultural land bank, that if you're buying over 15 acres, you have to come up with a 20% down payment. We don't have 20% to put down. But interestingly enough, there is one company in the nation that has one program they call a homestead loan that you only need 4% down. Guess how much we have? 4%. Guess when they put this into effect? They put this program into effect the month we started looking.